Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 69.
Bow chicky wow wow.
Okay, did you hear all that water just go down?
That's going to be my only thing for this episode, I promise.
Wow.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Chronicles of Crime 1400, a whole whack of different children's games, and all the matter. We're going to discuss the BGG thread, the best gateway games that Sean is not allowed to look click that thread, because I'm going to be quizzed, apparently, as I see. And hopefully, if we'll have time, we'll do some next up. And then we'll get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits. And, oh, we have to plug the coupon code, Michelle.
Of course.
ATB-TAKE5OFF100, which will allow you to take $5 off your order if it's over $100 at Board Game Bliss. One use per customer, because we sponsored y'all.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
And can you tell, well, even worse than usual, I feel like, that we haven't done this in a while?
We're a little rough. Yeah, it's been a long time. A really long time. Sean, why has it been a while?
Well, that's because there's a fourth gamer in my house now.
We have a new meeple.
There is a new meeple.
Yeah.
She is very small, and we've been discussing exit strategies for this episode because we're recording, but it's been a very pukey and long day. So there's a fairly good chance I'm going to get a text or a call from my wife that I need to run upstairs, in which case Michelle will just talk about whatever boring Euro she was going to talk about anyway.
That's right.
It's like you won't even notice a difference.
I'll look up beige in the thesaurus and list all of the entries. I don't think there will be many, but that's my plan.
And that will work just perfectly. It'll just have like a picture of Stefan Feldman there and like Jay Rosenberg.
I could sing. Everyone does love my singing. Do some bit singing.
The best thing about it is I won't be here to listen to it, so you can do whatever you want.
Right? There you go. Exactly. And we all know you don't really edit this thing.
No, so it's just
you don't have
like,
to listen to it in editing.
You're going to hear some Michelle singing and some like wheels squeaking on the floor and someone getting up and the table rumbling and then more singing at that.
And you'll be like, why am I still subscribed to this podcast? And I'll tell you why. Because we have a great Ask Me Anything bit.
Oh, what is that bit?
Well, we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby.
Yes, do you have a question for me, Michelle?
I do. Sean, I'm curious.
Yes.
If you mash the mechanisms of one game with the theming and art from another, what games would you use?
Okay, Dominion. Theming. Let's see. Blood Rage? Ooh, Dominion and, like, Grim Forest. That'd be cool, actually. That would work pretty well, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, like fairy tales and that sort of thing with, like, and just have some cute miniatures for the sake of it.
But, why not, right?
But, I mean, Dominion with pretty much any game has more theme than Dominion.
It's true.
So, that would work.
True.
Dominion.
Cool.
You would need, because there's so many expansions, so you'd need something really, really good.
Really robust.
Really, yeah. You need something with a big world.
Mm-hmm.
Big world.
Well, I would play that.
Would you?
I would. But I would also play Dominion, so really.
Yes.
Doesn't mean much.
I have a question for you, which I might have already asked you, actually, now that I think about it. But I feel like, unless I do, like, the board game geek thing, I feel like I can't come up with any original questions anymore. But if you were to write a book about any board game, what would it be?
About any board game?
Any board game. But it's got to be, you know, so you can't be like, well, I guess you can. I was going to say, like, you can't be like, oh, I'm going to, like, pick, like, Bruges and write about the city of Bruges. Like, you have to, an original novelization of a board game. Go.
Novelization? So it's not like a nonfiction. Like, as I was thinking, well, okay. I'll talk about Pandemic, the game in 2020.
Oh.
Cheating.
Too soon.
Yeah. What else would I maybe do? What would be a fun character to use? Oh, there's like nothing. I got nothing.
I mean, you could literally, you know, just take any game and just...
Yeah, I know. Okay, I'm looking at my shelf and I can't really see much, so I'm going to say the Taverns of Tiefenthal because drunken fools are always funny and it would be easy to come up with stuff. So it would just be a drunken fool book.
That's fair. That works.
Every chapter would be a different character in the bar or in the tavern.
That works.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
There you go.
What else I also like?
What?
Getting my guess on.
Nice segue. You literally just used the rest of your energy on that intro.
I know.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
All right, this is our guess the game bit, where we give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess a game. And, of course, we ask that you guess along.
Yes, we do.
This should be interesting on Baby Brain.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Okay, so let me let that ruminate and get ready, so I'll ask you first. So I can get my, slowly adjust my thinking cap.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. This game came out in 2014.
Ooh, okay.
It has a 7.1 overall. Really? Really? Has a 7.1 overall rating on BGG. I thought it would be much higher than that. And with 13,000 ratings and 2,500 comments, it plays 2 to 6 players in around 60 minutes. And has a weight of 2.43. What can I give you for Mechan?
Is it Kemet?
It is not. I guess I'll give... Okay, I'll give you the designers. Dominic Krapchutis, I think. Dmitry Nor and Sergei Mashin. Or Machin. There's a whole bunch of artists.
That's nothing. I feel like I've seen those first names before.
Yeah,
but...
you definitely have the first one. Should I give you the publisher? I'll give you the publisher. North Star Games, at least in North America. And a whole bunch of Russian places, which I don't think I knew.
North Star. I was going to say Stockpile, but they didn't do Stockpile. There's a game I'm trying to think of the name of, but I don't even think it's it. It's like the technology, like tech tree card game, but I don't think that's what it is. Okay, give me some mechanisms.
All right, I'll give you some mechanisms here. Action points. Hand management.
Mm-hmm.
Push your luck.
Push your luck. Oh, I'm going to be so annoyed when I hear this. I know I will be. I can't even think of a game they publish right now. Like, I'm just drawing complete blanks.
I'll give you the categories, because that will help. Animals.
I love how you do a big dramatic pause between them. Like, this is the one. Animals.
Card game?
Animal card game. Oh, man. I can't even. North Star Games.
Got really nice art.
Animals, nice art. What were the mechanisms again?
There's a whole bunch, but action points, hand management, I guess push your luck are probably the three main ones.
They didn't do, no, they didn't.
There's been a whole bunch of iterations since 2014 of this particular
game. Oh, really?
Game.
So I should really know it. Oh, is it Evolution.
Yes.
I actually really like that game, but I could never get it to the table.
I enjoy it.
I thought it was neat. I really liked the idea behind it, I think.
Yes.
Have you played Oceans?
I played it once. I enjoyed it. I don't remember. It was a long time. Well, not a long time. It was like last year, I guess, around this time-ish. Yeah, I don't remember a ton about it, though. It was really pretty.
Yeah, it does
but
look
they're
really
all really
nice.
Pretty.
Yeah, they are. They really are. All right, are you ready for your guess?
I'm ready to guess the game.
All right. I'm curious to see if you'll get this one. All right. So we've got a 2019 release with a rating of 7.3, and there's 2.1 thousand ratings for this one. It plays 2 to 6.
In
45 minutes, and has a weight of 2.08.
That doesn't play 6. Tiny villages?
Tiny towns?
No.
Good guess, though. That's actually a really good guess. All right, I'm going to give you some categories.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you all of them, though, because I feel like they're just too obvious.
Okay.
Card game. Deduction. Party game. And it's cooperative. 2019.
Letter Jam?
Sorry?
Letter Jam?
No. Letter Jam? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Yes, Letter Jam. I think you said like Waterton or something.
Pump up the jam.
That's such a nice cover.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember when that was like a whole thing in the board game? Hobby, I don't remember when Time Stories came out, but it was like right then, and it was everything was white covers.
Minimalist with like just like a dollop or something, yeah.
Yeah. That's 2015. Oh my god, that was 5 years ago. Jeez.
That's definitely gone away because games now look like a color clown just threw up on them.
It's not nearly as popular.
Not that I know.
Letter Jam did it.
Yeah. And Letter Jam is really, everything but Letter Jam, the components are really nice, they're really, like, premium in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really, have you played Letter Jam?
No.
Oh, I love it. So,
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of it, yeah.
Well, it's very you. It's a party game, a word game, a cooperative game.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. I would play it, for sure. I love word games, but this is our pew pew! Wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after a play or more using our superficial scale of 1, that would be a hard no, 2, meh, 3, I mean, it's fine, which in theory most games should be, 4, tis a gooder, and 5, it's got the spark. And Sean is upstairs taking care of his baby, so I am just going to tell you about some games on my own. All right, so my first pew pew is a game called Alma Mater. This game came out, I'm just waiting for BGG to load. There we go. This game came out in 2020, has a current rating of 7.8. Wow. With 540 ratings, it plays 2 to 4 players in 90 to 150 minutes and has a weight of 3.51. It's designed by Aki Toka, Flaminia Bersini, Virginio Gigli, Stefano Luperto, and Antonio Tinto. And if you know me, you know that those are some of my favorite designers. Art is by Chris Quilliams, also a wonderful artist who did, what's it called? Man, my brain is just awful today. It'll come to me. And it's published by Eggertspiel. So this game, what is it described as? Hand management, tile placement, worker placement, endgame bonuses, drafting. All right. So this is a Euro game, very much like the other titles that these designers have worked on, in that they are fairly tight. So what you're doing in this game is you're trying to get the most points. You get points in a fair number of ways, but there's kind of three main areas which you can focus on. There are professors, which give you round bonuses, often powerful actions that you can take once per turn. And then the ones that are more expensive give you end game bonuses. And there are also students, which you place on your player board, and they, same thing, they, some of them provide you with worker spots and some of them provide you with round bonuses, like perhaps during income you get a dollar, or maybe when you do this action you get to do this, for example. And there's also end game, so there's that. And then there is also a tech track, which you are moving up. And in order to move up, you must first take an action that allows you to move up, and second, pay to take to move up on the track. And the costs of the track vary pretty substantially, considering that each game you use different cards to build out the track. So some are, you know, paying for how many students you have, or it might be paying books, which is what I want to talk about next. So the main economy in this game, there is money, but the main economy is books here. So the way you build those professors, the way you get those students, is by collecting books. And there's a book in every player color. And in order to get them, you are purchasing them off of different players. So every player in front of them has a bookshelf that slides from right to left and has different costs above each book, as well as points. And so I can go to an action spot, for example, and purchase three books from the yellow player, pay the costs that are above those books, and then get some points. It's really quite fascinating, actually, because there's that economy of paying other players and also offering points for selling your books. There are actions that allow you to fill up your bookshelf and things like that. You're also motivated to fill up your bookshelf because you get money from your full bookshelf every round. So you're incentivized to keep that full and not necessarily take away from other players. So there's that aspect to it. So yeah, you have workers, you're going out to different spots to basically help you buy these different things, get books, and move up tracks, essentially. And you're just looking for the smartest way to do so to get the most points. There's other things, but I hope that gives you a sense of the game. And yes, this is considered the follow-up to Coimbra, simply because I think all or some of the designers are the same. Chris Quilliams was the artist, and they've basically used the same type of art. So it's like the exact same type of character, very colorful, very bright, which is quite refreshing for a Euro. I do like beige, but I do also like beautiful art and lots of colors. So kind of going on that vein, the bits are incredible. So there are these, like, I don't even know what they're made of. They're little books. Each, like I said, in the different player colors, there's a bunch of them. And they're really quite nice. Like, they even have, like, you know, white pages in between and whatnot. And they don't, I'm not sure what they're made of, because they don't necessarily feel like the Azul tiles, like that acrylic shiny feel. But they have a little bit of weight to them. So anyway, those are fun. They're just great to play with. And like I said, the art is wonderful. If you like the look of Coimbra, you would definitely like the look of this one. Lots of color, lots of character, and it has a great insert. Well, okay, maybe not great. It has an insert that fits everything. But like it has one of those inserts where your money is like stacked in a bunch of different slots. And I don't know. I just find that a little bit time consuming. You know, it's like everything fits, but it's kind of a pain to use, if that makes sense. But overall, a very good production. So I'd already mentioned this, but one of the things I do like about this game is that it feels really tight. So like Lorenzo, and similar to Coimbra, but tighter than Coimbra, you know, you do need to really stay focused. You need to think about what you want to do. The first game, you kind of feel like, oh, I didn't really get to do much. And, you know, the more you play, the more it opens itself up, which I find, yeah, is a sign of these designers and something I really enjoy about their games. The book economy I already talked about, I do really find that quite interesting. However, that being said, I feel like it shines at four. One of the biggest issues I have with the game, in a sense, is at the 2 and 3 player counts, you have to have a dummy player. Now, the dummy player is very easy to execute. You have a deck of cards to use for them. You literally just flip over a card. It's very straightforward. Put a few workers on a spot. Move that person up their token up the track. You know, very, very simple to implement, but still there. And I had this issue with Terramara as well, where it felt like it was a four-player game. Like, the whole time you're kind of thinking, should this just be a four-player game? So it does work at 2. It does work at 3. The economy is still there because you can purchase books from the dummy player, but the dummy player is not purchasing your books. So it's a really cool concept, and I feel like maybe I assume it's better at 3. You still have the dummy player at 3, but at 2, Yeah, there's better games for 2. Another thing that you might like about the game is there's perfect information. So it's quite strategic. Like, you can see the whole technology track. You know what professors are available. You know what students are available. You know, the only thing that really changes is obviously where the dummy player goes, like player actions, right? But it's all right there in front of you. So if you're somebody, maybe it's AP inducing, but if you're somebody who really likes to have all that information up front and kind of make a plan and be able to stick through it, this is definitely a good game for that. When it comes to replayability for this, I think it's pretty good. There are, like with the professors and with the students, which are a big part of the game and provide you with a lot of the little things that can make you feel smart, right? The way you make your turn kind of turn into a bunch of little things, and the way you make the game work for your strategy, that comes from them. And they are different every game. There's not a ton of them. Like, I think with the professors, I think you put out 2 of each type and there's 4. So I know, like, if you do the math, there's a ton, but like, it doesn't really necessarily feel like that. There's not a lot of surprises every time you set up the game. So it's like, it's good enough, but I wouldn't say it's fantastic. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all I have to say. The more I play it, the more I do enjoy it. Like, there's been a few times for me where I've thought of getting rid of it at the beginning, partly because it kind of had that like overly tight feeling where you just don't feel like you can do much. I feel like that's gotten better with some repeat plays. And then the second thing is just that whole 2-player bit where it feels like it should just be a 4-player game in a sense. So that held it back for me. But I still really do enjoy the game. I think it, you know, add the bits and the art obviously help a ton. And yeah, I think it's a solid addition to the Euro genre. But for me, it doesn't really stand out. So I give it a 3, a high 3. But yeah, I was a little bit disappointed because I was really looking forward to this one.
My pew pews are going to be more like pew, or maybe like 2. We're going to keep the pew pew away for this one, just because I'm just covering some kids' games. I'm going to talk about some that I've been playing a lot, both with my daughter and at work as much as possible as well. I have some other heavier games on the back burner that I've played that I'll talk about next time, but the baby brain is strong with this, Sean, so we're gonna keep it to some light kid games. So you know, one of the things I think we're really lucky about in this day and age with kids games are there are a lot of companies that put out really high quality kids games. You know, I'm not necessarily talking about mass market stuff. You know, they're games we've talked about on the show from companies like Haba and Jekko and another company, which I think we've talked about a little bit, is Peaceable Kingdoms. They make really, really a Peaceable Kingdom. They make really, you know, high quality games too. And not just in terms of what you're playing, but also component wise. And one thing I'm learning about at work is if I want to use games at work, I'm going to need ones, and I'll talk about it a little bit, but I need ones that can withstand, you know, constant sanitizing and constant cleaning, or else I can't use it, right? So I need stuff that I can use over and over and then sanitize and so on. We've discussed this too on the show, is that when I'm looking for kids games, I often like to try and find games that, you know, might be like an introduction to a certain mechanism or a certain type of game, you know, something looking down the line, whether it's my daughter, whether it's, you know, kids I work with or game club or whatever, is it something that can maybe lead to something a little bit more strategic as they grow older, right? And then they know this mechanism and they're able to teach someone at home. And I think pretty much all the games that I'm going to talk about today, I think are good choices for that. So the first one I'm going to talk about is Stone Soup. Stone Soup is from Peaceable Kingdom, which I just mentioned, and it's designed by Jim Daco with art by Laura Huska-Beth. And what this is, it is a very simple cooperative memory game. It is based on a book or a fairy tale. I can't remember exactly, but I've read the book, and I first discovered this game maybe like 7 or 8 years ago when I first started working as an SLP. One of the places I worked at actually had the book and the game as like a set, and you would read through the book and play the game and so on and so forth. And I thought it was really cool because all the kids absolutely loved it. And what you are doing with the game is there are a bunch of different foods and then magic stone and fire. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to create this soup with all your pieces by matching pairs in the pot before all the fire chits come out. And then at one point you actually have this magic stone, which will get rid of the fire. It's kind of sort of impossible to lose as long as you know to wait for the right moment. But what I like about it is that you can kind of talk about when you're going to use, have the kids discuss when you're going to use the magic stone. You know, you can kind of have them give each other ideas about where the different things are, because it is cooperative, right? And I like to treat it as such, where the pairs might be, where to look in the right area. So there's not a ton to this game, but kids absolutely adore it, and I found it last year at a thrift store, and I was super duper excited because I never find anything at thrift stores that I actually want. And my daughter started playing this maybe like 6-8 months ago, and she was like super into it. She would play it with mom, she would play it with me. When her grandmother came to visit, she played with her grandmother and really enjoyed it. I think she might have gotten all she needs out of it, because like I said, it's an introduction to co-op games featuring a memory component, which a lot of kids are familiar with. So probably going to give this a 3. I mean, it's fine. You know, right kind of there in the middle, but like this would work with like a 3-year-old probably really well, you know. Even though I can't remember what the age is for it. I'm looking here on the BGG. It says 5+. Like, not so. Once in a while with older kids, definitely, because I've done it with my like 5, 6, 7-year-old kids at work, and they enjoy it. Like, but for something to play over and over, like my daughter did, it's like it's kind of going to lose its appeal pretty quickly, especially once you figure out there is just one optimal strategy for it, and she figured it out. But it's still, I mean, it's fine, and it's a good introduction to those types of games. I think the other few games I want to talk about are all Haba games, but let me check. Yeah, so it's a bit of a Haba palooza here, because again, those are my daughter's favorite games. She knows the box, the yellow box is that's what it is. Even the kids at work, like, they're always super excited when they see a new yellow box that they haven't played before, because again, it's Haba, so they know. So the first one I'll talk about is In a Flash Firefighters. This game, I think, just came out in 2020. It was designed by Rudy Biber with art by Pascal Nolander. And this is kind of a, it reminds me of Galaxy Trucker, because you're kind of drafting, everyone's drafting tiles kind of from the middle at the same time, and you're, it's kind of like a tile laying game slash drafting game, right? So you're trying to get the tiles to have your firefighter dude put out the fire, whoever can do it first, and you have to match the fire hose tiles. So some might be at the bottom of the street or grass, some might be in the middle, some might be at the top, and you're trying to just connect them all the way to the fire to put it out, is basically what you're doing. And that kind of real-timey element thing where everyone's kind of drafting, it reminds me of Galaxy Trucker. I think we've discussed my feelings for Galaxy Trucker. I think it's a good game. I'm really bad at it and don't like to play it because I really struggle with it. But in terms of like that type of game, this is a really nice introduction to. This is a game my daughter really enjoys. She really likes it. She can beat me at it. Everyone I play with beats me at it because my brain just doesn't seem to work like that. So this is, yeah, this is another one. Again, this is one I think at some point you'll kind of, you'll might lose kind of, you know, what you have in there in terms of interest. I'm wondering. She's still into it. She still plays it. She's played it with a bunch of people, my daughter. This one's a bit tougher for me to play, like with the kiddos at work, because there are so many pieces. So I haven't really delved into it aside from one kiddo. But I'm looking forward to it, and I think this will be a big hit at Board Game Club as well. The kids like that sort of thing. I'm gonna say this will kind of go in the middle for me too. It's fine. You know, it's a solid game. It's definitely worthwhile for the collection, specifically if you're looking for that kind of real-timey, like, fast drafting element. And I think the firefighter thing is always a huge hit with kids too. The next one I'm going to talk about, and I've talked about this on the show, I've definitely talked about the board, quote-unquote, slash box on the show, and that's Snail Sprint. This one was designed, it's another Haba game, it was designed by Marie Fort and Wilford Fort, with art by Gabriella Silveria. And this is that game I think a lot of people have seen where it's got, like, a tin. It's in a tin, which I usually really detest, but you're racing all the snails and trying to get them from one side of the board to the other, and they all have magnets on it. So you set up the board, you have the board, the bottom of the box is part of the track, and they climb up the sides because of the magnet, over the top and down, which is obviously, you could see why, like, there's such a toy factor here, and that's everyone, yeah, I've played it with, really enjoys it. And this is an interesting game because it kind of has to, at the beginning of the game, you get your cards. And it'll have like three different color snails on it. And those are the snails you're trying to get to the finish line, which is inside the box, as quickly as possible, because that's what's going to get you points to win the game. So you don't necessarily control like pink and blue and red, or pink and blue and orange, or whatever. Those are what's scoring, but you're going to roll the dice. And whenever you roll the dice, you have to choose what color and what snail, like what color on the track you're moving to and what color snail you're moving to. So it's an interesting way that teaches you kind of decision making. Also controlling pieces that might not necessarily be yours, I think is kind of the best way to describe it. This game, yeah, like I said, this is a really nice game because I've been doing at work with this game, obviously, is I'm not using the cards. I'll just place the cards down. So it's kind of more open information. But the pieces are, because they're so big and chunky, they're pretty easy to clean. And I kind of control everything, except when the kids put it on the tin. I can't stop them from doing that. But it cleans up really well, which is nice because you have the tin and I clean it down. It works really well. My daughter absolutely adores it. She played it with her grandmother. She taught her grandmother. She was super excited. She likes mixing it with other pieces too. And there are a couple other rules in there to give it a little bit more strategy. But other than that, yeah, that's Snail Sprint, which I'm definitely going to say tis a gooder. As far as kids games, it definitely is tis a gooder. And I really like, yeah, I'm so easy with the toy factor of these games. So the last one I'm going to talk about is, of course, another Hobbit game. Although I feel like this isn't necessarily like your typical Hobbit game and that it doesn't have a bunch of fancy schmancy components. It's a roll and write called Color It, which also came out in 2020, I think, designed by Lena Birkenhart and Gunther Birkenhart with art by Sandra Kreitzman is the name. And this is kind of a introduction to roll and writes. I think everyone kind of knows my thoughts on roll and writes, and I'm a hypocrite and seem to be playing them more and more. But what you're doing in this game is you are rolling dice, and depending what comes up with your, you have numbers and colors, and you're going to roll them, and you're going to choose. Therefore, I think four different boards that come with the game that you can color. They're numbered 1 to 3. And you're going to roll your two dice, and you're going to choose a color and a number and fill that in. And you see who fills in first. You could play it a few different ways. You can roll it and see who fills in first. You can also, each row has to be the same color. I think there are a few other variants to play as well. They're really nice. There's like one with a rainbow. There's one with flowers, one with a house, one with hot air balloons. I think like you can download off the internet on the Hobbit website. You can even get like a Rhino Hero one. We have these all over our fridge. That's how much my daughter loves this game. Again, it's a game she can like teach. She taught Nanny. When Nanny came to visit, she's taught my wife how to play it. She, you know, kids will get carried away and just color on their own, which is fine. Whatever. We don't care. And again, this game works super duper for kind of a socially distant environment. The way we've played it at school is everyone just, I roll the dice. Everyone just gets their paper and then they will have their own set of colors or pencils or crayons. And that's it. That's all you need. We've also done this game online, like over Zoom, and I just fill it out and turn the sheet into like a digital thingamabob, a digital coloring thing. So they're able to just go ahead and use a Chrome app to color it on their own, which is really nice. Again, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Roll and Write, but because it's such a huge hit with my daughter, and it says 4+ year, you could probably do this with a 3-year-old. This has been a huge hit, and I absolutely, yeah, I will play this anytime because she asks and loves to color things differently. She loves this game so much that we even played, I think it was during Essen or one of the conventions, the Hobbit Twitter, we like played along and she sat through like an hour of it, just playing it and interacting, which was really cool. And you know, it's nice to see that. So yeah, that's Color It. And that's probably, I'm going to say, yeah, tis a gooder. Again, if you're thinking about kids games, like tis a gooder. Again, for an adult, you're not going to get very far with it. But in terms of kids games, definitely tis a gooder. It's probably borderlining just because it's been such a hit with all the kids I played it with. It's very much borderlining the spark, but I'm not going to go that far because it still is a roll and write. I have a bunch more that I could do, but I have a feeling there'll be other weeks where I'm just, other episodes, Michelle, where I'm just like, I am way too exhausted to think about what kind of strategies and stuff in this game, and we'll just cover a whole bunch of other Hobbit games from my giant shelf or a bunch of other Jekko or whatever games I have. But that's kind of it for now. So hopefully this helps some people. And I just realized now that I said Michelle like a few times during this, but I actually had to record re-record this part on my own. So, hey, Michelle, if you listen to this, okay, that's it for me.
All right, and my second pew pew is Chronicles of Crime 1400. So we were very, very fortunate to receive a pre-release copy of this game. And if you know me, I think you know that I quite enjoy Chronicles of Crime. So I was very excited to get my hands on this next release. So Chronicles of Crime 1400 is a standalone game in the Chronicles of Crime series. So the Chronicles of Crime series is a murder mystery game, similar to, say, Detective. I know there are others that I just can't think of right now. But you're working cooperatively to solve a crime or a mystery. And the unique thing about this game is that it uses QR codes to tell the story. So you'll start out with a location, you scan the QR code to go to the location, and then it'll say, you know, there's these people here, grab their cards. So you grab their cards, they're at that location, you scan those people's QR codes to talk to them. And depending on the information you found and the conversations you have, they actually will tell you different information, which is pretty cool. And then you can also look at crime scenes or scenes and pull out what you see. So, for example, you'll get, it's like a 3D scene, and you'll see like, okay, I saw letters, I saw blood, I saw paintings, I saw all of these things. You list them off. You go through a deck of item cards and you pull out all the things that you've seen and you scan those. Some of them will be relevant, some of them won't. If they're relevant, they'll, you know, oh, the blood on the knife was this type, you know, put it in with your clues sort of thing. And so you're basically going around talking to a bunch of people. You know, you can go to somebody and show, like, if you scan them and then scan an item, you're basically talking to them about the item. So what I like about it is it feels pretty open in terms of how you can have a conversation with them and what you want to talk to them about. So that's the Chronicles of Crime series in general. 1400 works much the same way, but it does add on some things. Now, unfortunately, it's been a little bit since I've played this, so I'll have to think through here. So one of the things it adds is a dog in this one, which your dog follows scents. So if you're at a crime scene, for example, and you find a scarf, you can give this to your dog, and your dog will perhaps follow the scent and lead you to a new location where someone from the scene could be. So that's pretty cool. Another thing it adds is vision cards. So these are almost like, they remind me of Mysterium or Dixit, not Dixit, Mysterium, where you'll have like, you know, four or five that you see at the beginning, and they're hints. So as you talk to people and as you unravel the story and get more information, you also use these vision cards, which mean nothing to you at the beginning, to help piece the information together. So those are pretty cool, actually. I like them as an add-on. Gave you one more thing to kind of think about and be aware of. The other thing in this one, so in the original, there was just evidence. So if you got a hint, you got a hint, you know, that was it. With this one, there's two types. So you might have someone talk to you about something, but you might not have it physically on you. So that's interesting because you can go talk to other people about this thing that you know exists, but you don't have. So you have limitations in terms of you can't necessarily get it analyzed because you don't physically have it, but you can still bring it up in conversation. So again, nothing big, but just a small little twist to make it a little bit more interesting. The standalone itself comes with four cases, which I thought was pretty good. And I think the price, like Canadian, I think it's about $27, which US is, I don't know, $20 maybe. So in my opinion, very, very good value for your money. So yeah, so that's the overall look at this game. So kind of going back to what I usually do, starting with the bits. I always appreciate with these productions, they have a really nice insert that fits everything. The art is absolutely beautiful and incredible in this in the series, but in this, in 1400 especially, it's just really well done. I really liked all of the changes. I didn't feel like any of them were superfluous. They felt like they enhanced the game, but they didn't take away from what made the game great. So I was happy with the additions. This is a bit harder for me to remember, but I remember the first case, for example, introduced a lot of characters and locations, like a lot more than what the original did. And it kind of started feeling a lot like a video game when you're like in town. You know, I kind of think of like Zelda, for example, and you're talking to different people to try to get information. And, you know, you might try to get like, you, someone might sidetrack you a little bit, or like, it just felt like there's a bit more puzzle and a bit more information that you had to get through, which I appreciated. Maybe some people wouldn't, I don't know. But yeah, all in all, I love this series. I really do. I really enjoy it. I think this makes it better. I love the theme. And I'm actually looking forward to the future themes. So this is, they're calling this the Millennium series. So this one was 1400, which you're a Parisian knight for King Charles VI. There's 1900, where you're a Parisian journalist. And then there's 2400, which you're like a futuristic cyber agent turned rogue crime fighter. So some cool themes, some great art. Yeah, if you didn't like it before, this is not going to change your mind, I don't think. But if you did, I would definitely recommend you pick this up. And I give this game a 4, which, if I go back to our official scale, it is a gooder. We talk about something so hot that even the sun can't touch this. Nah, 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 nah. I have to say, when I was making these show notes, I was looking forward to finding a good BGG thread spotlight. It's like, let's get back to basics. Yeah. But I could not find anything that was funny. I don't know if everyone's like down about something or something.
About what? What could everyone be down about?
I don't know. Right. I don't know. So I went with still a BGG thread on the best gateway games, but this was more of a poll where people voted. So I thought we would talk
about that. I'm not clicking the link.
You're not allowed.
Like the first thing when you send that thread is like, I usually like click it and then like read it, but then always forget everything by the time we go to record. But because of, you know, a little baby, I haven't actually checked it until now, so it's good. Because I probably wouldn't have seen your comment had I done it, and I would have clicked it and then or just lied and pretended that I did do it and then came across as really smart.
Uh-huh. That's what I usually do. That's what I usually do. All right. So this was a poll or survey on BGG. So 700 people voted on 468 nominated games. The definition of gateway, according to BGG, is defined as a game with simple rules that are easy to teach non-gamers in order to attract new players as a hobby. And, oh yeah. So then people are asked, why do you like gateway games, or why do you play gateway games? And most people said they play them because they are fun and can play them with their family. Yeah. Fair enough. So a lot of people, enjoy them and family. Mm-hmm. And the other options there were drawing people into the hobby, which I thought would have been one like higher than fun. Cool. For relaxation. They're my favorites and other. Yeah. No one loves them. Okay. Nope. So we're going to go through, I thought we would just talk through the top 10, but before we do that, the reason I told Sean he's not allowed to click the list is because I thought it would be fun for him to have some guesses.
Okay.
And also listeners had to take a minute to think, what you think the top 10 would be the best gateway games.
I'm sure you will do way better than me too. I guess Catan would be a wise guess.
Mm-hmm.
Am I just guessing like 10, or am I trying to go?
Yeah, just throw some out there. Just throw some out there that you think.
Carcassonne, Seven Wonders, See, I want to say like games like something like Codenames, too. But I almost feel like Codenames, you know, like party games like that are like not even something I would consider a gateway game, because I know people who like will not play any games, but they love Codenames. So I think that's. But I want to say that Seven Wonders, Clank. I always hear that Lords of Waterdeep is a big gateway game. Let's see what I've had luck with. I don't know, Five Tribes. Was that tiny game I mentioned, Tiny Towns?
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know if that's been around long enough to like.
Oh, that's true. Okay. I was gonna say Cartographers, like those. Welcome to like those types of games, but yeah, they're probably not been around long enough. Let's see if I can knock out another one or two. I don't think I can. Oh, Sentry, like a Splendor. Splendor.
Everything is Splendor.
Yeah. Speaking of Splendor, Sentry Golem or Sentry Spice Road. Probably. I've heard lots of people say Champions of Midgard is a really good gateway game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, even though, like, the same thing with Lords of Waterdeep, I feel like we're a little too, I feel like Splendor's a much better way to kind of get people in than something like Lords of Waterdeep. Looking at my shelf, but Dice Throne, like, in my experience, Dice Throne is a really good one to try and attract people's attention. Raccoon Tycoon is another one. I'm just like reading off my shelf now. And not
this is but your like, whole collection.
Yeah, pretty much. Down for that too. Las Vegas. Las Vegas actually is a really good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. I've had good success with that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the top 10. So it goes. It's 100. There's 150, but you know, I didn't think we'd want to do that. That would be torture for everybody involved. So we'll look at the top 10. So number 10 is Patchwork.
Oh yeah. Okay. Am I allowed to click the link now?
Yeah, you can come click the link. You can come in. We can have a conversation.
All right, let's see. Oh, yeah. I'm so STUPID, yeah.
Yeah, so Patchwork, I'm actually kind of surprised to see Patchwork just because it's a two-player only game. But anyways, but it is good for that. Number 9 is Splendor.
Nailed it.
No surprise there. I was curious, like, I feel like I'm slightly out of touch with the hobby compared to what I was before I had my daughter. And I'm like, is Splendor as popular as it used to be? Or like you mentioned Lords of Waterdeep. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Splendor's still pretty, it feels like it to me, but I don't know in terms of sales, or I'm sure I could do the research and find out, but I'm not going to do that.
No, you're not.
I still hear from like newer gamers like about Splendor. Have you heard about this game Splendor? Or like, have you seen this? It's got like, you know, it's got these really cool poker chips in it. You would love it, Sean.
I never really liked Splendor all that much, and I never had much luck with it with non-gamers. Like, they're like, okay. I'm like, yeah, okay. I don't know. But
and I can't believe I forgot the next one you're gonna say, because I feel like that.
Yeah.
My greatest success with as a gateway game.
So number 8 is King Domino. Now it's interesting. I'm noticing in brackets they have like new -4 or -2. So I'm curious, when did they do this last?
So I think does it say 2008? Well, is this part of a guild or part of a geek list or something? I think
they last ran it in 2013.
Yeah.
In 2013. So Patchwork, Splendor, and King Domino are all new to the list. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next one is number 7 is King of Tokyo, which has gone down 4 spaces. Yeah. No surprise there. Number 6 is Pandemic.
No, too soon.
It went up 2. That was my gateway into the hobby. Number 5 is Sushi Go or Sushi Go Party.
Yeah,
that's that went up 50. Wow, when did it come out?
That's another one that I've had a lot of really good success with.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah.
And that one's like everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really like Sushi Roll, but it doesn't seem to have taken off as much. No.
Yeah, I've tried it once or twice, but.
Okay, so Sushi Go came out in 2014, so I guess it was, fairly new when this was originally run, or the last time it was run. Number 4, For Sale. It went up by 1. Do you like For Sale? I love this game.
Yeah, I really like For Sale, yeah.
Yeah, I really, really like this one.
Yeah. I just don't have it for some reason. It feels like a game I should have.
They just ran, I don't remember what publisher, but yeah, there's just a Kickstarter for it with an expansion. Mm-hmm. So I'll be picking it up once it's out for sure. All right, number 3, Codenames. You told yourself it wouldn't happen, but here we are.
Yeah, story of my life, man.
All right, the number 2 is the Carcassonne series. Uh-huh. I think that was the second one I bought out. So I got into Pandemic, and then I was like, what else is there? Oh no, I got Arkham Horror, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Thanks to some guy at Discovery Hut who thought that was the best recommendation. It was the Robinson Crusoe. Those were his two recommendations. Oh,
really? Seriously?
Yeah. So then after that, and I actually did enjoy Arkham, but I mean, it was a bit of a undertaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, then I got Carcassonne and I was like, it was okay. I don't know. I didn't get too excited about it.
But. I have played a half a game of Carcassonne. I think I mentioned this on the show. I have played a half a game of Carcassonne, and that's
it.
I've never played it. I've heard like some of the expansions are really good and like really amazing. I've just never, I've never. Part of it is I don't own it, but
right.
Yeah, but I've heard that there are some great things with it, and I've just never done it. Which I feel like I should correct that.
You probably should. Yeah. I kept buying expansions thinking, okay, this is the one that's going to make me really like this game and like see it for what it is. And I love titling. I'm surprised I don't love this one, to be honest. All right. And number 1 is super obvious. Yeah, I don't even think you mentioned this one, though, did you?
Not at all.
No. Ticket to Ride.
Yeah. Yep. So I think Ticket to Ride was... ish, like one of my gateway games along with Dominion. I, even before, actually, now that I think of it, because I remember having it on, like, I don't remember if it was like the original Xbox or whatever, having it on, or Xbox 360, one of the two. But now, what was hilarious, and I can't remember if I talked about it on the show or not, is I only had one controller at the time. But I had Guitar Hero. You remember Guitar Hero?
Oh, I remember Guitar Hero. All right.
So I had the guitar for Guitar Hero. And so my friend used to come over and she would play it and we would play it together. And she would use the controller and I would sit there with the guitar and play Guitar
Hero. Oh my God, that's amazing.
So now that I think of it, it's probably more so than Dominion, actually, because I would have played that before. I don't think I even owned Dominion or Ticket to Ride. Dominion was like the first game that I owned, and I think I got Ticket to Ride like after King of Tokyo, like one of those. But yeah, like I totally remember playing it like with a Guitar Hero controller.
That's hilarious. Ticket to Ride was another, I think after Carcassonne, I was like, okay, let's try again.
Yeah.
And what do you think? I don't like Ticket to Ride. It does nothing for me. I did pick up Marklin because I played that once and I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to try that. And I played the kids version, which is all right. It's okay. But yeah, I don't know. It just.
I think I got my fill of it on Xbox when I owned it. Like, and I had Tickets for Ride Europe, and I haven't played, like, I've heard, is it the Scandinavian one or whatever? It's supposed to be like really good at like two or three players. Like one of them is just for like two or three players or something.
Okay.
And then like I know they've released again like the boat one, a bunch of others, and they have like the mini ones now. So there's a lot of stuff for Ticket to Ride. And I mean, you could still you could go into any bookstore like Chapters or Indigo here or Barnes and Noble in the States, and like there's Ticket to Ride front and center on the game shelf still. So I mean, it's definitely drawing people in.
Yeah, people really do love it. I just do not.
So
that's okay.
I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of looking at this list, It was last edited in 2018. So in the last year and a half or 2 years, can you think of any games that might have come out that would be good as gateway games? Or like,
well, you brought up Tiny Towns.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Tiny Towns.
And Cartographers, I think, was
yeah
a good choice. Like, Llama.
Yeah, Llama. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because No Thanks is on here.
Although I don't know if card game, I mean, they have Sushi Go in there, but I don't know if card games make people go, oh, like, I want to explore more. Like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe a board game would.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when I had Llama, like, hey, if I explain Llama to anyone, I'm like, you're playing Uno with some stuff. You probably play Uno at some point, right? So it's like, yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, it doesn't have the same feeling. Like, No Thanks, I love. And
I do too.
I've gone through multiple copies of No Thanks in my relatively short time in the hobby. That's how much it's been played. But when I think of No Thanks versus something like Ticket to Ride or Carcassonne or Pandemic or King of Tokyo, you know, like, yeah, it's like, it seems like there's a difference there.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if people would be like, oh, are there more games like this? Well, maybe they would. I don't know. Yeah, there's, to me, it's different. The other one I'm looking over at my shelf that I know it's not really as popular, but I feel like it would be good, would be Number 9 by Z-Man.
I see that.
I think that's a good one. I don't know that. I think that's 2018 or later.
I feel like that's around when it was. I feel like it would be on this list if it wasn't. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe like Funkoverse. I don't know if that'd be like a top 10, but like.
What about Villainous?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Kind of all. Even the whole like Target line of games is kind of good.
Yeah.
You know, because they seem to take like fairly popular IPs and, you know, it's Target. So a lot of people see them.
It's Target. Right, like being like a whole shelf of just those games, Jaws and Funko and Horrified, that stuff. Yeah, there was another one I was thinking, but I can't remember the name of it now, so I suck. So I'm not gonna even try.
Okay, well, I'm gonna quickly go through. I'm not gonna go through the whole list, but I'm gonna go through and kind of point out some of the bigger drops or the bigger gains.
Yeah.
And maybe you'll think of it. So we mentioned Sushi Go had gone up 50, which I think just because of its newness.
Yeah.
Cartagena had gone up 32, which I remember who was really into Cartagena.
Is that the it's like a pirate, well, it would be a pirate game. It's like a.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a review. I think it was Dice Tower, but I do remember there was a little bit there where someone was really talking about how good Cartagena was.
It's a good game. I played it a couple of times. It's been a while though.
Yeah. Takinoko fell 44 spots to 54. Yeah. So it was in the top 10 and it went way down. I don't see that much being played much anymore.
No.
Catan went down 46. That's huge.
Yeah.
So it's at 56. So
although I do wonder if like you were to do this list now, if Catan would go up, because I feel like now, what is it like the 10th or 15th anniversary or something of it?
Maybe
some sort of round number. So like I feel like it's like I'm seeing advertisements from it from big stores. I'm like, you know, you're seeing tons of news and stuff about it. So I'm wondering if that would go up based on. But yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. Dominion went way down it went down 47 spots to 65. The Resistance went down 55 spots to 67, which doesn't surprise me because I feel like it was everything. And then it was like Rolling Rights nowadays. Like everyone and their dog came out with a social deduction game and the market was completely flooded. What?
Your dog come out with a social deduction game?
Yeah, he did.
Gosh, it's hilarious. I have my iPad starting next to the desk, to the desk, and it's like Siri is like picking up on everything I'm saying. It's just
They're listening. Cash and Guns went down 53 to 92. That doesn't surprise me. That was really popular, and then you never heard about it. Oh, Finca, that's a good one, actually.
Yeah, I've heard things about that.
Yeah, it is. I own it. I like that one. It went down 62, probably because it was out of print for so long, 2005. Mm. Although, they did a Kickstarter, it came back in print, not for like a big cycle or anything, but it's still like no one talks about it. Oh, another big one was Flashpoint Fire Rescue. That went down 88 points to be at 110. Ouch. That game, Rich really likes that game. We used to play it a lot, but I just felt like almost solvable. Mm. I don't know. I didn't really like it.
I've heard, yeah, I think I've heard that. I think I've heard there's one of the expansions or expansion packs that you need for it.
Mm.
I think I've seen stuff.
All right. And the last one I'm going to mention is Sorrow, which I would have expected to be near the top. It's at 128 and it dropped to 90. Sorrow. You know, the.
Yes. Are you trying to say Zorro?
No.
I'm, just kind of looking at this and knowing what. Well, Lords of Waterdeep is on here and dropped from 4 to 32. Again, I don't quite. Yeah, as a gateway game, I still don't really. And it's simple Lords of Waterdeep, but I don't know. Maybe it's just I haven't had that much success with it. I was thinking Stone Age was the other one. I was trying to think of it. And like from this list. Yeah.
It's 20, number 21.
21 from number 2. And I wonder if that has something to do with it being, it was hard to get for a while and then reprinted. So that. And the other ones, the two, Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert, I would have expected them like, to be a little bit higher too. And it seems like they dropped in the years between.
They did.
Years. I'm curious where they are now. Like, again, if you do 2020, I mean, the forbidden whatever science one or whatever, which was just all gimmick and actually not really much.
Yeah, that one didn't
game.
Do so good, hey?
No, mm-hmm. I still feel like people, especially Forbidden Desert, people talk really fondly of it. And I hear.
I had Forbidden Desert and I sold it and then I picked up Forbidden Island, which I still haven't played, but I picked it up for Chloe.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a good one for.
Forbidden Island, like, I feel like I still, people talk pretty favorably about, but again, Forbidden Island for a gamer is like, you know, Chloe's age or maybe a year or two older. Like, it's like, yeah. But Forbidden Desert has that extra little bit of complexity in it, so I would have expected that to be higher. But.
It was decent, yeah. Yeah, it's number 40 on this list. I didn't even realize, I apologize, I didn't realize it was 2018. For some reason, like, I just go through the, like, hot and active forums, and this popped up, so.
No, I like looking at stuff like that, because especially, like, this one, like, so that gap is from 2013 to 2018. So it's, like, in those years. You know, how much have they changed? We'd last run this contest in 2013, and then the results, what the difference has been. So it's interesting to see the new entry. I really like, there's a few of these. There's, like, the there's a cooperative geek list that, like, does the same thing every year or every couple of years or whatever. There's a solo one. There's a couple others. I really like, those are, like, the threads I really like following on BGG. Because I like seeing the difference from year to year, and you can usually tell. It's hard this one to tell, because it's not so much in our domain as more active gamers. But I like looking for those trends that you could see. Like, again, like, I feel like if there is one for 2020, you know, I feel like Roll and Rights are probably going to be on there.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of which, where's Quix on this list? Come on now.
I saw
number
some.
38.
Yeah.
So good.
Yes, I do enjoy Quix.
Yeah, I agree. I think there'd be a lot of rolling rates.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, cool. Well, there you go. There's our hot topic.
Yeah. It was back to a similar time, Michelle.
A simpler time.
Simpler times. That's where
we don't want to talk about 2020, so we're just going to talk about 2018.
It would be so good if we were in 2018 right now. It would be so good.
We can also look to the future, Sean, next up.
Long I can't. There we go. I'll slide it better.
Yeah,
not
that
good.
Was really good.
That was like a foul pitch off my toe, and they had.
I was trying to picture that. I'm like, what, you like spin the bat on your hand and like hit the ball a bunch of times.
That's what it felt like. Yeah, right off my toe. Now I have a broken toe. So this is our next episode.
Worth it.
Whereas we're going to hype up and discuss games we can't wait to fondle, or not necessarily, well, games, I guess they're games. You can go first, Michelle.
All right. So my first next up is Curious Cargo. I don't actually know a whole lot about this game, but I do know that it was designed by the same fellow who did Pipeline. And it's a two-player only game. Ryan Courtney is the designer. The artwork and the look of it looks really cute. It's the pipeline aspect of Pipeline. So the tiling aspect. I don't know the exact goal, but it looks like a tile placement game where you're trying to make pipelines do different things, and go in different directions. I've since heard a few reviewers say it's actually very, very thinky.
Okay.
And
I said okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Which excites me. Yeah. Like I quite like Pipeline and I quite like the tile puzzle. So I'm just really curious to see the evolution of it. I like the look of it. I like the price point. I'm just really excited to play through this one and
I would like to play this. I've actually did that was the sarcastic. Okay.
Okay.
I'm having trouble regulating how I say things.
I understand. That's like me every day.
Yeah. I am totally interested in Pipeline. Just seem too much for me.
It is a lot. It is too a much. Lot.
I would like to play this.
It looks really neat.
Yeah. I would really like to try.
I heard it's kind of mean. I'm a little worried about that, but still interested to play it. So
I'm still kind of catching up on
game life
stuff, on life, figuring out what's coming out and what's not. But I do want to mention a game that's on Kickstarter that I'm totally interested in. And part of the reason I put this on here is because I know what Michelle is going to be talking about next. So I want to upstage her and talk about this first. No,
this is
I'm a horrible person. This is Questlings. It's a children's book series and RPG game that's currently on Kickstarter. I think it's from I want to say Dan, but I can't remember the company's name. I'll get to that in a second. But what they're doing is they're releasing a series of books. Using, you know, stereotypical whatchamacallit tropes, like D&D tropes or fantasy tropes. So you want to be a paladin, so you want to be a mystic. And they're targeted at really that, like, you know, I think 4, 5 to 6 to 7 or 8 year old range. They look really bright and colorful. But to go along with the books, which is what I'm super interested in, is there's an RPG. And it's written by Banana Chan, whose name I've been seeing in a lot of stuff. I think she mostly does RPGs, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff on Twitter and Kickstarter about her. And what I really liked about this is, and they sent us over just a, you know, kind of like a PDF of it, and I was looking through it, just because I'm always super interested in kids RPGs and stuff that works for kids, mostly so I could use it for work. but what I really like about this is it kind of takes that D&D feeling, so using those characters, and kind of distills it down. So it uses very minimal dice. You know, the problem with D&D and doing D&D with a youngin is the whole dice rolling issue is a bit of an issue. So it really distills it down. It uses lots of bright, colorful graphics. And it does, there's a couple things that I think are really cool about this and the reason I'm going to back it and I'm super looking forward to the actual hard copy of it is when you're doing the RPG, you're playing two characters. You're playing one in kid form and then one who's your inner hero. So Johnny, you're playing Johnny, but you're also playing the paladin, which is his inner hero, which is a really neat thing. At least I like that idea of being able to do that. Because you're playing an RPG, you're just, okay, I'm transporting myself into this one character, this one thing. But this one lets you, you know, and I've totally come across this is when I do RPGs with kids for work, is that they have a little bit of trouble kind of putting themselves into just a character. So they kind of fall back sometimes on things that they would do, and that kind of takes a little bit of explanation. So I like that this kind of lays that out from the start and does that. And the other thing I was super duper impressed about this and really liked about this is they're using a few different kind of safety mechanisms for the game, and particularly this one thing with red lights, yellow lights, and green lights. So like if you're uncomfortable with something as you're playing it, you can just hit the red light or tap the red light to be like, I am uncomfortable with this. I don't want to do this. I don't like this. I'm scared. I don't want to talk about this anymore. The green light, though, if you're really liking something or something's really fun that you're doing in the game, you know, you hit the green light. And so it kind of lets me as the DM know, okay, I need to do more of this because Johnny's like super into this. So I need to make it a little bit more like this for them. So that, and it's let him in games that's producing this, you know. So I'm like super duper looking forward to this. I'm super excited and I can't wait. I don't know. I think the Kickstarter says it's going to drop in like August-ish, but it sounds like they have a lot of the stuff done. So yeah, this nice. Is kind of like an instant back for me.
Very cool.
Speaking of role playing games,
yeah, I have a very 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 similar next up, and this is all thanks to you, Sean. But my next up is No Thank You Evil, which actually came out in 2016, and is an RPG for kids. So I've never actually played an RPG. I would play one, but I've never. My daughter loves telling stories, and she's very good at it. And we spend a lot of time doing it. And so when I saw Sean had uploaded a picture of him and his daughter doing it, I thought, you know, I think Chloe would absolutely adore doing something like this with a family. So I decided to pick it up. It's on its way, and I am just super, super excited. I'm going to give it to her for Christmas. This is like the gift I'm most excited about giving her. I just can't wait. I think it's going to be a ton of fun, and I think she's just going to really, really enjoy it. Hopefully. I'll let you know.
It's so much fun. It's so great. Yeah. No Thank You Evil is just like my favorite. I have like everything for it just jammed because there are a bunch of different expansions and cards and stuff. I have everything jammed in the box and it's just like torn on all four edges of it.
Nice.
It's there's so much content and it's such a fun game. And it's so good for laying everything out for like a 4 or 5 year old. For them and just letting them control and for some like someone like you who hasn't played an RPG and like me who's like before I touched No Thank You Evil I had never really got into RPGs or done anything with RPGs. It kind of really walks you through being a game master and controlling.
Good, because that's the one part I'm like, I don't know how this will go, but
it's got like a nice little section that just will tell you what you need to do and then walk you through it. Like it tells you everything that you should ask as you're going through to like get her involved and all sorts of other stuff. I adore it so much.
Good.
There are a few things in any tabletop video game, board game, whatever that I adore more than No Thank You Evil.
Yay. Well, now I'm even more excited. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just can't wait. I think it's going to be so much fun.
Then we could just discuss, you know, the stories our children tell on the show. I'm sure people will love that.
Yeah, yeah, we could.
We'll probably find it super amusing because it'll be some wacky, wacky, you know what, some wacky poop that comes.
Well, there, I can tell you for sure there's going to be a gray bunny because my daughter has a gray bunny stuffy that goes everywhere. So
there you go.
Yeah. Did you have anything else you want to talk about, or was that it?
No, that's it.
All right.
There's some stuff. There's some games that, like, what's that? You probably know. You've probably played it already. I think you posted, you know, the new one from Shem Phillips.
Mm-hmm. You know? Viscounts.
Yeah, there you go. A word I can't pronounce, but I'm like, yeah. Super looking forward to playing that. That would be on my next stuff.
It's very good, I will say.
Good things. Yeah. We'll
probably talk about it next episode. I don't know. There's just so many games. I've played a lot of new games lately, and I have a bunch more coming. It's just, it's that time of year. It's very exciting. So I almost want to, like, I was saying to Sean, I almost want to do just like an episode of just going through all the games. Cause
that's what our good friend of the show, Jeremy Howard, does. He goes to everyone's podcast except our podcast, which is unfortunate. And I'm calling him out in a sense. But, you know, he's like got all these games and then just goes on like all these places and just talks about them. So, yeah, you should totally do that.
I just might because there's too many to get on the podcast. So anyways, Sean, thank you for taking the time because, you know, your life is kind of crazy right now. And also, thanks to all of our amazing listeners. If you're still sticking around, thank you so much.
I think they are, Michelle, because I've gotten quite a few messages from people being like, "When's the next episode?" And when, like, I'm
is
sorry,
this still a thing.
You know, we're still a thing. Michelle still posts on social media. So look, we're still a thing.
Yes, and as things normalize, hopefully our schedules. Will too, and we'll start creating. I don't want to say regular because I don't think we've ever been regular, but like more regular. How's that?
Hey, I am pretty regular these days.
Okay, great. I was worried as soon as I said that word, I was like, here we go. Yeah,
that's where it's going. Right. Hey, this episode could have gone a lot worse for episode 69.
It could have. It was not our best, but it was. Our worst.
We could have gone. I could have gone to some dark places, and
you could have.
I would not have a three week old. That probably would have happened, but it didn't. So you guys can all thank each other. Thank you.
So yes, thank you to Sean's children for distracting him from the fact that this is episode 69. And also thank you to Board Game Bliss, our show sponsor, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. True story. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcast. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.